Welcome to Money is Freedom, a podcast exploring how finance and freedom connect in our lives. Created from thoughtful research and narrated by Notebook LM AI, this series brings you clear, meaningful insights into finance and beyond. In episode 22, we delve into Ethereum's potential as a contrarian investment for 2025. Despite current market sentiments favoring Bitcoin, Ethereum's unique strengths, such as its robust ecosystem of decentralized applications and ongoing technological advancements, position it for significant growth. We'll explore expert analyses, historical performance, and the factors that could propel Ethereum to new heights, challenging prevailing expectations in the crypto landscape.
Hey there, all you crypto fans out there, ready to dive into some Ethereum predictions?
Ethereum predictions.
For 2025.
Oh, yeah.
We're going deep on this one. But with a twist, we're focusing on those contrarian viewpoints.
Contrarian.
You know, the ones that challenge the mainstream narrative.
Yeah, those are always fun.
We've got a whole stack of sources here. Mm-hmm. Social media posts, articles even.
Oh, wow.
Snippet from the Money is Freedom podcast.
Okay.
And some of them are getting pretty spicy.
Spicy.
When it comes to ETH's potential.
Oh, spicy price predictions.
Well, yeah, you know, right off the bat, we see this clash of opinions, you know.
A clash.
Some see ETH skyrocketing. Others are convinced it'll struggle against Bitcoin.
Right, right. That's what makes this deep dive so exciting.
It really does. So buckle up.
Buckle up.
By the end, you'll have the knowledge to form your own informed view.
Your own view.
Maybe even win a few arguments at your next crypto meetup.
That's right. Well, hopefully they'll be friendly arguments.
Of course. But let's jump right in with this venture founder character.
Okay. Venture founder.
They're all over social media calling ETH a huge,
huge
contrarian bet.
Contrarian. Okay.
They think it's going to outperform Bitcoin, even though
outperform.
So many people are feeling bearish on it right now.
Like bearish.
Yeah. What's interesting about venture founder is their level of conviction.
Their conviction.
They're saying that $10,000.
$10,000.
To $13,000 ETH by 2025.
Okay.
Is a conservative estimate.
Conservative. Wow.
Not financial advice, of course.
Right.
But definitely a bold statement.
Bold.
And they make this really interesting point comparing it.
Comparing to Bitcoin price prediction.
To Bitcoin.
$250,000 for Bitcoin by 2025 almost seems normal these days.
Yeah, it seems normal now, yeah.
But $15,000 ETH.
$15,000.
Suddenly, that's considered incredibly bullish.
That's wild, right? Why is there such a difference in those expectations?
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does.
I think it highlights how narratives and market psychology
can sometimes overshadow those underlying fundamentals.
Yeah, overshadow the fundamentals.
Venture founder is pointing to these historical patterns.
Historical patterns. Okay.
Specifically, what happened after each Bitcoin halving?
After each halving.
They even shared a chart showing how the ETH-BTC ratio spiked after each halving.
Spiked. Okay. Interesting.
We're currently 8 months post-halving.
8 months.
I think we're about to see history repeat itself.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is.
Past performance doesn't guarantee future results, of course.
Of course.
But it's a pattern that's hard to ignore.
It is hard to ignore, especially when you consider...
Especially when you consider...
That Ethereum has some unique characteristics.
Unique characteristics.
That could drive growth regardless of what Bitcoin does.
Okay, regardless of Bitcoin.
You're talking about its real-world applications.
Real-world applications.
The Why Ethereum article really dives into this.
It does, yeah.
Exactly. They highlight how Ethereum is already being used for so much more.
So much more.
Than just speculation.
Yeah, speculation.
Think about stablecoins, for example.
Stablecoins?
Those are revolutionizing how we move money around the world.
It really is a revolution.
And 75% of all DeFi protocols.
75%.
Wow. Are built on Ethereum. It's like the backbone decentralized finance.
Yeah, yeah. It really is.
It's like Ethereum is this bustling city.
A bustling city.
Constantly growing and evolving. And now, we're seeing institutional investors wanting to be part of it.
Oh, yeah, they're coming.
Right. Multiple sources touch on this growing importance of institutional adoption, especially with the launch of Ethereum ETFs.
ETFs.
These make it easier for those big players. To invest in ETH.
And invest.
And that can have a huge impact on demand and price.
Huge impact. Yeah, for sure.
And get this. In November of this year.
November.
ETH ETF inflows actually surpass BTC ETF inflows.
Surpass Bitcoin. Wow.
For the first time ever.
That's a big deal.
Isn't that a pretty big deal?
It is a big deal.
It suggests a shift in sentiment. Institutions are starting to see Ethereum as a legitimate asset class.
A legitimate asset.
Not just a speculative plaything.
Right.
And that's a trend that could continue to drive growth in the coming years.
In the coming years, yeah.
We also got a glimpse of this in that Money is Freedom podcast you mentioned. Mm. Jamie, one of the hosts, was talking about.
Oh, yeah, Jamie.
How ETH's on-chain activity is exploding.
Exploding, okay.
He made a great point about how the network is genuinely busy right now.
Busy, okay.
It's not just people trading back and forth.
Not just trading.
It's DeFi activity, stablecoin transfers, all sorts of real-world applications.
Real-world applications.
So even if you're skeptical of the whole ETH-BTC rivalry thing.
ETH-BTC.
There's still a lot to be excited about when it comes to.
Be excited about.
Ethereum's underlying fundamentals and its potential for real-world impact.
Absolutely. But it's important to remember that there are also dissenting voices out there.
Dissenting voices.
Not everyone is convinced that Ethereum is going to have this smooth ride to the top.
Yeah, smooth ride.
We need to look at those perspectives as well.
We do. And that brings us to VanEck.
VanEck. Okay.
They're actually quite bearish on ETH.
Bearish, really?
At least compared to Bitcoin.
It's a Bitcoin.
Their prediction for the ETH-BTC ratio in 2025 is just 0.033. That's not great, is it?
No, not if you're hoping for ETH to outperform Bitcoin.
Right.
Their prediction implies that even if Bitcoin hits $180,000.
$180,000.
ETH would only reach about $6,000.
Oh, $6,000. Quite a difference from venture founders' outlook.
Yeah, huge difference. Why are they so pessimistic? Are they just Bitcoin maximalists?
Bitcoin maximalists?
Or do they have genuine concerns about Ethereum's future?
Well, it's probably a bit of both.
A bit of both.
Bitcoin's dominance in the market is undeniable.
Yeah, it is.
And some analysts believe it will continue to be the primary store of value. Primary store of value.
In the crypto space.
In the crypto space.
But there are also legitimate concerns about Ethereum.
Legitimate concerns.
Scalability is a big one.
Scalability.
Can the network handle the increasing demand?
Yeah, the demand.
And gas fees are another issue.
Gas fees, right.
When those get too high, it can stifle innovation and discourage users.
And then there's the competition.
Competition.
From other blockchains.
From other blockchains.
There are a lot of smart, talented people.
Smart people.
Building alternatives to Ethereum.
Alternatives.
It's not impossible to imagine that one of those challengers.
One of those challengers.
Could eventually steal some of Ethereum's thunder.
Steal the thunder.
Yeah, it's a crowded space, that's for sure.
It is crowded.
But let's not forget about Ethereum's strengths.
Strengths.
The sheer size and activity.
Size and activity.
Of its developer community is a huge advantage.
A huge advantage.
And the network has already proven itself to be remarkably resilient.
Remarkably resilient.
Plus, they're constantly working on upgrades.
Upgrades.
And improvements. Think about EIP-1559.
EIP-1559.
And the introduction of deflationary tokenomics.
Inflationary tokenomics.
That's a big change that could make ETH even more.
Even more.
Valuable in the long run.
In the long run, right?
Certainly factor to consider, but.
Factor to consider.
Before we get too deep into the technical weeds.
Weeds.
Let's zoom out a bit.
Zoom out.
And look at the bigger picture.
The bigger picture.
What are some of the macroeconomic factors that could. Influence ETH's price in 2025.
Okay, ETH's price.
Well, there's talk of potential quantitative easing, QE, in 2025.
QE, right.
Historically, QE has been good for crypto because it tends to devalue fiat currencies.
Devalue fiat.
And push investors toward alternative assets.
Towards alternatives.
Right. And we also have a relatively favorable political environment right now.
Favorable, okay.
There's a growing acceptance of crypto.
Growing acceptance.
And we could see more pro-crypto policies being enacted in the coming years.
Pro-crypto policies, interesting.
So the macroeconomic backdrop could be quite supportive.
Supportive.
But how does all of this tie back to...
Tie back to?
Those contrarian predictions.
Contrarian predictions.
We were talking about earlier.
Earlier.
That's a great question.
It is a great question.
And leads us right back to the Money is Freedom podcast.
Back to the podcast.
There are a few more gems in that discussion.
Gems.
That I think we need to unpack.
Unpack those gems.
They have a very interesting take on when the best time to buy ETH might actually be.
The best time to buy.
But we'll save that for part two.
Oh, gotta save it for part two. Picking up where we left off last time.
Right where we left off.
It seems like Ethereum is at a crossroads.
At a crossroads.
Uh-huh. You've got these incredibly bullish predictions from folks like Venture Founder. Fueled by those historical patterns we discussed.
Right, those historical patterns.
And the belief that ETH is about to break out against Bitcoin.
Break out against Bitcoin.
It's exciting to think about, but
exciting.
Then you have these more cautious voices.
Cautious voices.
Like Venek with their much lower price target.
Yeah, their lower price target.
It's enough to make your head spin.
It really is.
Exactly. And that's why we're here.
Here to
cut through the noise and help you understand.
Help you understand.
What's really going on.
What's really going on.
Not just tell you what to think, but right. Give you the tools to weigh the evidence.
Or tools.
And form your own conclusions.
Your own conclusions.
Okay, so let's zoom in on Ethereum itself.
Zoom in.
Beyond the price predictions and the ETH-BTC rivalry.
Okay, beyond all that.
What makes Ethereum so compelling as an investment?
That's a great question, and that's where the Why Ethereum article really shines.
It really shines.
It makes a strong case for Ethereum's intrinsic value.
Intrinsic value, okay.
You're talking about the vibrant ecosystem.
The ecosystem.
The sheer volume of developer activity, it's mind-boggling.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And its dominant position in decentralized finance.
Decentralized finance.
You mentioned this before, but it bears repeating.
Yeah, it bears repeating.
75% of all DeFi protocols
75%?
Are built on Ethereum.
On Ethereum.
That's a level of dominance that's hard to ignore.
Hard to ignore.
Right. It's like the foundation of a whole new financial system.
A whole new system.
And it's not just about DeFi.
Not just DeFi.
Ethereum is also being used for stablecoins.
Stablecoin.
Which are revolutionizing global payments.
Revolutionizing payments.
Speaking of revolutionizing payments.
Yeah.
The Money is Freedom podcast.
That podcast.
Had some great insights on that.
It did.
They were talking about how stablecoins offer a faster, cheaper, and more global way to move money.
Okay.
Compared to traditional methods.
Traditional methods. They even quoted A16s.
A16s.
A major venture capital firm.
Venture capital.
Saying, like water, payments flow to the path of least resistance.
Path of least resistance.
And stablecoins are that path.
Stablecoins are that path.
That's a great analogy.
It really is.
It really highlights how Ethereum is facilitating.
Facilitating.
A huge shift.
Huge shift.
And how we think about money and finance.
Money and finance.
And as these crypto payment rails expand.
As they expand.
A larger chunk of global GDP could flow through them.
Wow. Global GDP.
Ethereum as the leading platform for stablecoins.
The leading platform.
So it's right in the center of that.
Right in the center.
Absolutely. And that brings us back to institutional adoption.
Back to institutional adoption.
We already talked about how ETF inflows have...
ETF inflows.
...surpassed those for BTC ETFs.
Surpassed Bitcoin, yeah.
But some analysts believe this is just the tip of the iceberg.
The tip of the iceberg. Hmm.
The Money is Freedom podcast.
That podcast again?
Actually mentioned a prediction from Bitwise. Another investment firm.
Another one.
That ETF inflows.
ETF inflows.
Could potentially exceed Bitcoins in some quarters of 2025.
Exceed Bitcoins, really?
They argue that the ETF market for Ethereum.
The ETF market?
Is nowhere near saturation.
Nowhere near.
Especially with large wealth management firms.
Wealth management firms.
Still in the early stages of offering these products to their clients.
To their clients.
So the full impact of institutional capital hasn't even hit Ethereum yet.
It hasn't even hit yet. Wow.
Let's imagine what that could do to the price.
Yeah, I mean,
but let's be realistic.
Realistic.
There are risks too, right?
There are always risks.
Of course, scalability is still a challenge.
Scalability.
Can the network handle the increased traffic without?
Increased traffic.
Those pesky high gas fees popping up again.
Those gas fees.
And let's not forget about the competition.
Oh yeah, the competition.
There are other blockchains out there.
Out there.
Vying for Ethereum's crown.
For the crown. It's like a race, and Ethereum has a head start.
Head start.
But there are some fast runners catching up.
Fast runners.
Diversification is key.
Diversification.
As they say, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
One basket.
Especially in the crypto world.
The crypto world. Wise words. And speaking of the wider world.
The wider world.
What about those macroeconomic factors we were discussing?
Yeah, those macroeconomic factors.
There's buzz about potential QE in 2025.
Okay.
Which could be a boon for crypto, historically speaking.
Historically speaking. Hmm. and a potentially more crypto-friendly political environment. Post-election could add more fuel to the fire.
These macro tailwinds could lift the entire crypto market. But Ethereum, with its solid foundation. And growing institutional interest. Would be well positioned to benefit. It almost feels like the stars are aligning. But as always, these are just predictions. No guarantees in the wild world of crypto.
That's what keeps things interesting, though, right?
It does.
But let's circle back to that intriguing point. From the Money is Freedom podcast. About the best time to buy ETH. They argued it's when gas fees are low. Relative to the market cap. Now that sounds counterintuitive. Most people would think high gas fees are a good sign. A sign of activity and demand.
It's definitely a contrarian view. But their argument is that high gas fees during a rally. Can signal overheated sentiment. Like a warning sign of a potential market top. When things are quiet and gas fees are low. That's when you might find hidden opportunity.
So ignore the hype and look for those moments. When everyone else is panicking.
It's not quite as simple as that, of course. But the point is to look beyond the surface. And really understand what those on-chain metrics are telling you. High gas fees during a boom might be a red flag. Not a green light.
And Jamie also made the observation that while gas fees are high right now. The network is genuinely busy. This isn't just hype-driven speculation. It's real-world usage driving the activity.
That suggests the long-term outlook for ETH could be strong. Even if there's some short-term volatility. And this ties into another intriguing point they made. About banks.
What do they have to do with Ethereum?
Well, the podcast host suggested that banks are actually well-positioned to utilize Ethereum in the future. Think about it. They already have the infrastructure. And the regulatory know-how. To handle financial transactions at scale.
So you're saying they could go beyond just investing in ETH. And actually start using the Ethereum network. For their own operations. Imagine
banks using Ethereum for things like settlements.
Tokenized assets.
Or even central bank digital currencies. That would be a huge leap forward in terms of institutional adoption.
It would completely change the game.
But
isn't that a little far-fetched? Banks and crypto seem like they're... opposite ends of the spectrum.
It might seem that way. But we're already seeing banks experimenting with blockchain technology. And Ethereum with its mature ecosystem. And then proven security is a natural fit. Remember, institutions tend to move slowly. But when they do move. It can have a seismic impact.
So we have this fascinating dynamic emerging. On one hand, the potential for massive institutional adoption. Driven by things like ETFs. Stable coins. And even banks using the Ethereum network.
And on the other hand, the challenges of scalability. Gas fees and competition from other blockchains.
This
complex equation. But that's what makes it so captivating.
Like, we've been exploring this vast uncharted territory. And we're just starting to understand its true potential.
And there's still so much more to discover. But for now, let's take a step back. And reflect on what we've learned.
It's amazing how much ground we've covered in this deep dive.
It really is.
From those bold contrarian predictions. To the nitty-gritty of gas fees and institutional adoption. It's been quite a journey. It really highlights just how multifaceted Ethereum is. It's not just a cryptocurrency. It's a platform for innovation.
innovation.
A breeding ground for new ideas.
New ideas.
And potentially a catalyst for a major shift in the global financial system.
That's right. A major shift.
It started by exploring those contrasting viewpoints.
Contrasting viewpoints.
On ETH's future.
Right.
Venture founders' unwavering bullishness.
Unwavering.
Versus VanEck's more cautious outlook.
More cautious.
Then we dove into the heart of what makes Ethereum tick.
The heart of Ethereum.
Its real-world applications.
The real world.
The DeFi ecosystem.
DeFi.
Stablecoins. And the growing wave of institutional interest.
Institutional interest. And let's not forget that intriguing insight.
Oh, yeah.
From the Money is Freedom podcast about those gas fees.
Those gas fees.
It's a reminder that sometimes.
Sometimes.
The best opportunities are found when everyone else is panicking.
Panicking, right.
And who knows, maybe we'll see banks running on Ethereum one day.
Banks running on Ethereum.
It sounds crazy, but.
It does sound crazy.
A few years ago, who would imagined ETFs for crypto?
ETFs for crypto, yeah. It's true, the crypto world moves fast.
It moves so fast.
But I think the biggest takeaway for me is that there's no crystal ball when it comes to predicting ETH's price in 2025.
No crystal ball.
There are strong arguments to be made on both sides.
On both sides, absolutely. Exactly. We've laid out the evidence.
The evidence.
The potential risks and rewards.
Risks and rewards.
The historical patterns.
Patterns.
And the macroeconomic backdrop.
Macroeconomic backdrop.
But ultimately, the decision of what to believe.
What to believe.
How to interpret the data.
Interpret the data.
And whether or not to invest is up to you, the listener.
Up to the listener. So here's a final thought to leave you with.
A final thought.
As you continue your own research.
Your own research.
And exploration of the crypto world.
The crypto world.
Ask yourself this.
Okay.
What do you think is the most important factor?
The most important factor.
That will determine ETH's success in 2025.
ETH's success. Is it going to be the ETH-HBTC dynamic?
ETH-BTC.
With those historical post-halving breakouts?
Those breakouts.
Or perhaps the rate of institutional adoption?
Institutional adoption.
With ETFs and maybe even banks jumping on board.
Banks jumping on board. Maybe it'll be the growth of real-world use cases.
Real-world use cases.
With things like decentralized finance, stablecoins, and tokenization taking center stage.
Tokenization.
Or could it be something else entirely?
Something else.
Something we haven't even considered yet.
We haven't even thought of. There's no right or wrong answer.
No right or wrong answer.
But the very act of asking these questions.
Asking the questions.
Of critically analyzing the information.
Analyze.
And forming your own conclusions.
Your own conclusions.
That's what makes this journey so fascinating.
This journey so fascinating.
We've given you the tools and the knowledge.
The tools and knowledge.
Now it's time to go out there and explore for yourself.
Explore for yourself.
Happy diving.
Happy diving, everyone.